Some radio stations bring you traditional Christmas tunes at this time in December. At Siren, we bring you the best in Yuletide music and the end of the Mayan calendar. Settle back and enjoy. It could be the last show you'll ever catch before ascending to the next level.
The following takes place between the hours of 1.02 a.m. and 2 a.m.
It does, yes, exactly. It's in a standard way. Tonya, are you still there?
Still here.
Hey, and your reward, exactly, your reward is not just one, and indeed to the listener, it's not just one Tonya track, classic Tonya Kennedy, but we've got another one set up as well. But meanwhile, Graham Harper, what did you make of Tonya's fantastic interpretation of the Leonard Cohen classic Hallelujah?
I absolutely do not like Leonard Cohen, I have to tell you that.
Right, even though he took Suzanne down to the river.
I thought it was awful.
Oh my God, is that Simon? Is Simon sitting there?
No, this is Graham Harper. But Tonya, I have to say, your interpretation of that song was brilliant. That was absolutely beautiful. And I didn't know it was you. I just said, oh, this is a lovely piece of music. I know the song very well, but I don't like him. I never have. I found him very pretentious, I'm afraid. So, not the song. That's the way you put it over.
Did you think it was Leonard Cohen's propensity for wearing his beret that might have actually sort of put you off, really?
Me?
Yeah. Bird on a wire? Like a bird.
I was so uninterested.
On
didn't
a wire.
Like
a drunk. In a midnight choir, I have tried in my own way.
It's delirious now.
You don't even need MP3s. You could just sing through the entire show.
Anyway, I wouldn't really necessarily recommend doing Leonard Cohen in person.
Do you like Leonard Cohen?
I think he can. There are moments. There are moments when I think he's okay.
Sure.
There are moments where he's okay. But you know, I won't use the Phil Lynas quote. You know, if I have ears to listen with and a heart to enjoy, what's not to appreciate? But there we are. But we're talking Tonya Kennedy. And why did you actually choose Hallelujah as a tune to actually cover, Tonya? Because you've done superb justice to the whole thing. Was it something?
Thank you very much. Yeah, I've had wonderful compliments on the version that we did, and the reason that I recorded that song was there's a fundraising foundation in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada, and they hired us to come out to Saskatoon to perform at a big benefit that they do every year. This was a couple of years ago, and I just really loved that song. And I'm much the same. I'm not a huge fan. I don't know that I've ever heard a version of Leonard doing it that I like, but many, many other versions of the song I love. And so we were performing it just because I really love to sing that song. And the people who run the whole foundation, they as well really liked our rendition of it. So they asked me, they approached me afterwards and asked if I would be interested in recording it and having it as part of a fundraising effort. So that's exactly what we did. So even to this day, it's 2 years later, if anybody purchases that song, it all goes directly to the cause, which is to raise money for cancer research. So that's the only reason that we did it. I had no intention of ever recording it, but it was just such a good cause, I couldn't say no.
Fantastic. You may have actually heard the more eagerly listeners amongst yourself there.
Sorry, I thought I was going to sneeze.
Inhalation of breath of our police sergeant there, who obviously sort of wanted to make a comment there. Sometimes just that. Just move the microphone away. So please, what do you think this is? BBC Radio 1 with Chris Moyles.
Thank you.
Please.
One reason I think that song was brought to a new generation as well was through Shrek as well.
Oh, Hallelujah. I know. Oh, yes. Absolutely, yeah. I don't know that was the first time I heard it, but it might have been.
Yeah.
Like it was, and I remember, actually, it's funny, I remember seeing somebody do it at a pub or something at karaoke, and I believe I actually said to the person I was with, hey, that's that song from Shrek.
Nice.
So
yeah,
I think you're right.
Is it Leonard Cohen? Is it Shrek? What did you make of Hallelujah, Ed?
I think it's the most profound piece of music, and even if you're trying not to be moved by it, as soon as you hear that song, it stops you dead. And especially a version of it, Tonya, beautiful.
We will play it again. But now, Tonya, if you'd stay with us, we've still got Jean Bruce Scotch to actually come live from Los Angeles to work through this. I think it's only right that because you stayed with us in this particular area, we play another Tonya Kennedy track. What do you say, chap? Should we have another Tonya Kennedy track?
Please,
yes,
please.
Did I just say that? Yes, she did. see, to me, that demonstrates versatility, class, wit, wisdom, joie de vivre, just an all-round wonderful human being, really. The kind we've come to appreciate Cameron Tilbury, yes. Maple Star Music and Media representing. Oh, there we are, sorry. I don't know. It's, Graham was obviously reading the newspaper. I don't know whether that's a comment, really. Please.
Just move it back.
I mean, in mitigation, you know, we are featured in the show there, so, you know, yes.
It's live.
Exactly, yes, or is it another sort of tape, etc. What did you make of Did I Just Say That? Dave.
Loved it. Very, very different style to Alleluia.
Yeah.
However, it has woken me up sufficiently enough
to go shopping.
To pop to the 24/7 supermarket
exactly.
down the road.
That's right.
To buy a chocolate Santa for my little girl
take
to school.
Yeah.
Yes. So there you go.
It's fantastic stuff.
So you've motivated me to do that, Tanya.
I'm so happy
thank
that
you.
I motivated you to do that.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world, and Tanya Kennedy has actually sort of motivated Dave to go shopping for his children. Fantastic.
Yes. And tell me that
you know
does
what? My
take...
work here is done.
That does, Tanya, that does take a lot of motivation, I can tell you.
Ed, did I just say that?
I loved it because it... Don't take this the wrong way, because it ended. I knew that was going to sound bad.
Yeah.
I knew that was going to sound bad because it ends with a chord
yes.
rather than a fade out. I love a song that ends with a chord. You feel like you got there.
Sort of a hard
yeah.
ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard ending.
Good.
Not a kind of waffly, fadey, fadey, fadey bit.
No, there's no waffle, fadey, fadey in that one. It's
exactly.
just in your face.
And Graham?
I loved it. And I loved the versatility. I thought it was just nice to hear you play a really emotional piece and then one
yes.
that's really gutsy and rock and roll.
I think we should already be working on 2013, the Tanya Kennedy Musicathon. I think we should actually be going on that basis. So there we
I think I like that. I like that. I think that sounds fantastic.
Tanya, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on this, your part of the Myathon?
I've had a brilliant time.
Excellent. So yeah, back on Cooking with Guests. So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
Absolutely.
There we are, Tanya Kennedy. We'll return. Up next, Jean Bruce Scott from Magnum PI, from Airwolf, from Native American Voices, the first of three segments she's actually connecting with us on. We've still got Dean Haglund to work through. We've got Peter Franklin live in New York, of course. But now Katie Melua. So the first person to actually officially like one of the photographs, which we thought we'd put up semi-regularly, and admittedly, you know, when you're multitasking and you're a male, it's always going to be a bit more challenging than that, was indeed the next soul who's actually connected with us, one of our favourites, who indeed is coming to Lincoln in 2013. Proof that there is going to be continuation, that we're not just going to end it all now. We are in the day as far as the UK is concerned, the time being 16 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock in the morning. That's 1 a.m. So accordingly, when it's 5:20 p.m. in Los Angeles, whom should we be speaking to, Ed?
Jean Bruce Scott.
The legendary Jean
Absolutely.
Bruce Scott. The fantastic Jean Bruce Scott. Jean, welcome aboard the Myathon. How are you?
I am great, and I'm so happy to be here for the Myathon.
Brilliant, exactly. Now, you'll be pleased to know that not only have we got ace television director Graham Harper in the studio, and I'm sure, as always, if you want to have an extra special American guest person to step into Coronation Street, Jean possibly available, you know? I mean, if Shirley MacLaine can do Downton Abbey, or Downton Abbey...
That was Petula Clark.
Exactly,
that did
it's true. Exactly,
Abbey,
yes, that is a different line entirely. I'm sure that we can work on Jean Bruce Scott getting the cinematic yes. work in terms of Native American voices and so on. But you know, we'll come to that in a few moments. Ed, you did your duty. I passed you on copies of Airwolf, da 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 da, all the things. Particularly Jean with that classic episode, which had the line, "Well, if all else fails, get out the bikinis, girls, and sing songs."
Right. Okay, geez. I remember that one.
Yes. Oh, it was wonderful the way you kept everybody so calm in that aeroplane.
It was a chopper.
Caitlin O'Shaughnessy finds herself in an airplane that effectively is sunk. You know, it's shot
really?
Down, it goes
yes.
down. She's at the bottom of the sea. Jan Michael Vincent's character of Stringfellow Hawk and, of course, Dominic Santini, played by the late, great Ernest Borgnine, desperately trying to actually find her. And obviously the plane is slowly filling up with water. Caitlin O'Shaughnessy's role is to keep people happy and entertained. I can see you're gripped by this, Graham.
I am, yeah.
yeah. And so you you know, the series itself, just so sensational. I think you liked everything, Ed, apart from perhaps some of the special effects.
Yeah, there was just one bit with one. The plane coming down on the water from the side, which I'm quite sure about.
Well, you know, it was Glenn Larson. Actually, it was Don Belisarius, basically. Maybe he was just sort of working his way into the whole thing there. Besides, I thought it was a big plane as well. Anyway,
exactly. I once asked what made a car blow up when it went over a cliff.
What made a car blow up when it went over the cliff? Is this a punchline?
I've always wanted to know that.
I was told Don Belisario.
Nice!
So, burst into flames when it hits the water, Don Belisario.
Genius! Of course! It's eminently sensible.
Oh, we like a bit of flame.
Precisely. We've got another little question for you, Graham, which has come in via the internet and Facebook, etc. And it's from Penny Evans, bless her. If you get chance, all we have for you, Penny, we've got chance. I'm sure Jean will actually acknowledge the fact that it's okay to ask Graham this question.
Yes.
Marvellous. That's okay. There's a slight time delay there because, you know, it's very important that these things are sorted through. Can you ask Graham about his feelings about directing the fateful train crash for Coronation Street's 50th anniversary back in December 2010 with producer Phil Collinson, another Doctor Who alumni? Now, Coronation Street, Gene, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but it's a bit like To Serve Them All My Days, or indeed Days of Our Lives, which you were back on, really, a kind of ongoing, open-ended, never-ending series of soap operas. In fact, probably Britain's biggest soap opera, would you say, Graham? Mm.
It is, I think, it's been...
Ahead of EastEnders?
It's ahead of EastEnders, although they probably wouldn't agree with that.
And for their special 50th anniversary, 50 years, this series has actually been going, Gene. You know, it's, I know. Non-stop, twice a week, sometimes three, four times a week, amazingly. But, you know, it's been working its way through that. They decided, we're going to actually blow up a train. Because that's what you do, you know, to celebrate that. You keep
Graham
it real.
Do it.
Yeah, exactly. Graham, set the scene and how you became involved with the direction of all of this. As I say, all you needed was Cybermen, Daleks, and possibly a guest appearance by Airwolf, and the scene would have been complete. Anyway, carry on.
Gene, I've directed 13 stories of Doctor Who in this brand new series that's been going on for the last 5 or 6 years. The reason I say that, it's been going for 50 years, would you believe, but with a 20-year gap in the middle of it.
That's Doctor Who that's been going for 50 years next year. Coronation Street, of course.
Yeah, but Coronation Street celebrated its 50th anniversary 2 years ago, and I was asked by Phil Collinson, who was the producer of Doctor Who. He moved on to produce Coronation Street, and he asked me if I would like to come and join the show to do a block of 5 episodes, which would start... with this a massive tram crash. It's a tram, like the San Francisco trams.
Except, unlike the San Francisco trams, it doesn't go up and down those hills with Carl Malden and Streets of San Francisco doing stuff.
But it did run on a higher level above the Coronation Street set.
On the viaduct, wasn't it?
There's a viaduct at the end of the street.
I hope you're following this, Gene. It is important.
I'm trying.
Well, it's a street. Coronation Street is a street with 10, 15 families, and the whole series about, you know, it's a soap about those 15 families, as it were, and all the comings and goings, whatever. And they want to celebrate the 50th anniversary by doing two things. One is to create the most enormous, biggest calamity that could ever happen to the street. So that was the tram crash coming off a viaduct, which is about 30 foot above the street, and crashes down into one of the shops and the street itself, killing various people and whatever. And the other...
It was a good way of sorting out the more wanted cast members from the less wanted cast members. You know where we're going here, Gene. You know?
And everybody, it was lovely. No one knew who was going. Only on the day of the actual moment did the person who actually did die really get upset, because they realised...
You mean my contract's not being renewed? Oh, no!
It was that...
really?
Yes. It's absolutely top secret. Nobody was to know anything. For the good of the show, apparently, but that's...
Yeah, they always say that, Graham, for the good of the show. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
So that's... I forgot what the second one was. I've got so excited. Anyway, so I was... Oh, yeah, the second part of the second great event was that one of the episodes would be live and go out as a live episode. Well, I was not involved with that at all. That was done by the most extraordinary director, who, if you saw that episode, you'd have thought it was had been pre-recorded and cut together and absolutely edited in a very, very tight, fast way. But in fact, it was a live episode, and everyone was gobsmacked. All the press were convinced that that was not a live episode. It was actually edited and had been pre-recorded. But it actually went out live. So those were the two great events. I thoroughly enjoyed the big effect. It was absolutely stunning, and I thought everybody was absolutely brilliant in it. So that was my involvement with the 50th anniversary of Coronation Street.
How in the world did you pull off an explosion live?
Well, it wasn't an explosion. It was a... I didn't do the live episode at all. That was somebody else. And they didn't have any explosion. I can't remember actually what... they had a death. They had a marriage, death and a birth.
So it's important, really. So, and the tram actually sort of collided. Presumably it's available on YouTube. I mean, if Gene wants us to actually sort of, you know, fill the family with some entertaining times.
Have a look at the 50th anniversary Coronation Street tram crash.
Okay, very good.
Don't watch the rest of the episode. Just watch that. It's brilliant.
Because I think at present, Jean, yourself and Randy, you're actually sort of catching some sporting event. Is that correct?
We are. Our college football team is in one of the bowl games, the Poinsettia Bowl. And so we're at a pal's house, and people are hollering in the background, and we're watching American football.
You see, that's what I like about Jean Bruce Scott. You know, the end of the world is contactively here, you know, 21st of routine, and she's celebrating some college American football. Fantastic.
Of course.
She's genius, Pearson. Ed, questions from yourself.
Oh, lots, I think, Jean. Where do you see 2013 leading us all? Is it going to be good?
Well, I'd like to see, obviously, it leading Jean and Randy Bruce Scott to the University of Lincoln, and indeed, you know, a stack of things in Lincolnshire, including, of course, Harlexton. There we are.
I think 2013 is going to be our best year yet. I think that this celebration that you're having the next 2 days is all not about the end of the world, but about the beginning.
Yes.
And I see many, many new, wonderful things happening. Not the least of which in the United States might be taking care of some of our political issues. So we're on the right track already.
What did you think of Obama's... I hate to say the word performance the other day, when he was making a... obviously, his tribute to what happened the other day in with respect to the school. Somebody I mentioned, I saw in the lift here at the university, thought it was just a little bit not very statesmanlike, if you know what I mean.
You know what? I think it was very statesman-like, and I think that having now, unfortunately, having had to respond to four of these horrific tragedies, that we can cut all of our leaders a little bit of slack
in
statesmanship, and you know, look to them now for some human answers and non-political answers, and that's where I say 2013 is going to be great, because I really do think that discussion has started in earnest. We've paid lip service to taking care of some of the gun issues in the United States before, but I think this time something is actually going to get done, and so I'm exceedingly happy about that.
Good.
Just in case Katie Grimerson is wondering, she's probably asleep now, but yes, Katie, we will hopefully feature you tomorrow, but obviously you're in bed now, so we can't feature you now.
We've got another number for her now.
That's all right, then. That's fine. That's code, Jean. It's our routine. Graham.
Okay.
Jean. This is much more mundane, but you've just said a quote just then that I hear a lot here, but I see a lot in writing of scripts, but I've never heard anybody ever in England say this expression except on television when a writer has given that actor a particular line, and you just said, I've not forgotten what you just said now.
It's been a long day.
No, you just said, cut me a bit of slack. I've never heard that expression said by anybody in England other than an actor when that line was written for him. And I kept wondering, where the heck does that... Where's that come from?
Yeah. Gene Bruce Scott,
you've
obviously
suddenly said it. Yeah. So it comes from America.
Yeah, clearly.
Yes, I guess so.
There we go. You see, once again, we've managed to actually nail down another one of those little mites that's just been sort of irritating us slightly over the years. And all. By the way, who's winning in the Poinsettia Bowl?
When I came in, there was no score, and we had just fumbled the ball, so my crew was not very happy.
I think you've got scored. I've got a feeling you've just scored.
I had a feeling that there was a sort of score system on that basis. It'd be quite interesting to find out. And now, are we in Los Angeles today, Gene, or are we elsewhere?
We're actually... actually in San Diego today.
Wow. Ah,
and we're in a lovely little village called Kensington.
Very good.
Yes. I know that, but only in London.
Upon Kensington and Chelsea. Yeah.
But I went to LA 2 years ago, and one of my dreams was to go to San Diego because I was told it is the most fabulous town.
It is.
Far greater, far more beautiful than LA. And I never saw it, and I really regret that. I hope I have a chance in my life to go back.
I think when we start the midweek drive on location, we'll get you over there.
Oh, yeah.
Come and stay with me. Come visit. You're absolutely welcome. If you're a friend of Alex's, he'll vouch for you. Come stay with me.
Well, there you are.
He's looking a bit dubious.
Graham, how long have we worked together now? 26 years. 27 years.
I'm coming, Gene.
Okay. Well, does that mean, Alex, that you can vouch for him just because you've worked with him for 26 years?
Nice point. I like that. That's why we've appreciated you on the show, Gene. Yes, I think it's fair to say, yes, Graham Harper is one of life's wonderful people. I felt as I was almost in a Disney-esque moment that was actually coming through on that particular
very
perspective.
Much,
but, yeah, very, very much so for that line. But
you are invited. Please come. Come do the broadcast in San Diego and stay with us.
And of course, as I say, you're coming to Lincoln next year. It's very exciting. I mean, basically, it's fair to say, Ed, that even in the Lincolnshire Echo today, they've been promoting the excitement of Gene Bruce Scott and Randy Reinholtz coming to Lincoln, haven't they?
Page 63.
I know that doesn't sound a great deal, but page 63 is important. Would you like to read out the relevant piece, effectively?
Absolutely. Yes, indeedy. Here we go. The eyes are starting to go.
Tell you what, pass it over here. I'll do it for you.
Would you like to do it?
Just take our way through that whole system.
Thank you for that.
Page 63 on the whole routine. Siren FM linking up live with the American radio station team that we actually have here throughout the broadcast. This is apparently me being quoted. Well, I think I did say this, actually. Throughout the broadcast, we'll be linking up with Hollywood to commemorate the occasion and feature many of our regular contributors, including filmmakers, writers and actors of the calibre as Randy Reinholtz and Gene Bruce Scott, series Magnum PIO. Wolf. Randy and Gene will be visiting the University of Lincoln in April, where they'll be guests on Siren FM, and we'll also be meeting students. So there we are, you see, the word has already started going out there.
How wonderful. Well, that's great.
Very important.
We like that.
I'm not quite sure about the lead story in the Lincolnshire Echo, a weekly newspaper these days, which actually has a man with the caption, "Show us your Brussels." But, you know... it's rural routine. Farm manager John Mason
Indeed.
Proudly showing off some of the Brussels sprouts being harvested from his 12-acre crop at Wool Hall Farm near Spalding. So, I think there's a series that can be made about that, Graham. But, as an opening gambit, I would have said it's not something I could see Tom Selleck necessarily using in Magnum. Show us your Brussels, Higgins.
You have the main character, you could actually call it a sitcom, called Russell's Brussels.
If you're writing that down, Gene, we'll actually sort of go 50-50 on that.
Gene,
and I'm sure we'll get things together.
I'm sure you'd be a fantastic female lead in that.
That's terrific.
Well, next time around, in an hour or so, we'll be talking more about Native American voices. But briefly, do you want to promote your Christmas special that you're doing yourself, Sergeant Dave Milling?
No, I'm not in that sort of line. I'm completely not involved.
He is
with
a police
that.
Officer, but he's stepping aside for the purpose.
No,
of this
I do it as myself in my own sort of life, if I'm allowed to. What we've got on Christmas Eve. At 10 o'clock, it's myself, my friend Anthony, who regularly contributes to the show from an entertainment perspective, who's a producer at Radio 2. I'm a normal co-presenter, Josie, who's an actress, also in a spare time. What we decided to do is, we like our quirky sort of chart shows, and what we've decided to do this time is to do two parts, one on Christmas Eve, one on New Year's Eve, of the number one, we play the number one... featuring the number one album of that particular year. So we start off in 1956.
Got to hurry you along here, Dave. Okay.
Absolutely, no worries. And we go all the way up to 1989. But there are some really interesting things about some of the albums there, in the fact that the ones that you expect might be number one album of the year actually aren't.
I can tell that some of our transatlantic listeners are beginning to lose interest now, but keep going.
Yeah. Well, there are... There are, Alex, you know, fair enough. But, Gene, one thing that may interest you is that in the first sort of 15 years, musicals do actually feature very heavily. We go from Carousel, South Pacific...
Airwolf, the musical?
Airwolf, the musical.
It hasn't been
written
yet.
Sadly not. South Pacific, we feature Sound of Music. There's also... King and I feature as well. So there are plenty of musical
stuff as
well.
It's a treat to tune into on Christmas Eve on Siren 107.3 FM, assuming we get through the next day.
I'm doing Christmas Day breakfast show from 8 till 11 as well.
Well, there we are. That's wonderful. It's just one wonderful thing after another. Just a quick reminder in terms of what you're listening to as far as the Mayan calendar is concerned. And I must admit, apologies, Gene, for not adding you to this particular little jingle ident, but, you know, this is the way things pan out.
Phil Leonis, Ilana Rain, and Dean Haglund in downtown Los Angeles. Alex Leftuke, Ed Wellman, Nicola Clancy, and Tasha Turney in downtown Lincoln, England. What's not to love, especially if you're measuring time via the Mayans?
Quite right, too. And you wanted me to actually vouch for Graham Harper, Gene? Well, Malcolm Tomlinson did when he actually recorded this.
He's a top racehorse commentator, a fine actor, an all-round good egg. It's Malcolm Tomlinson on the Midweek Drive.
Yeah, I'll just rephrase that. I was actually Graham vouching for Malcolm Tomlinson.
Go for a rest. He needs a sleep. He needs to get to sleep.
It'll be where we'll sort out other matters.
More sugar.
Things. Exactly. Quite rightly so, too. Gene, have you enjoyed your first part of your contribution to the Midweek Drive Myathon here on Siren 107.3 FM?
I have. You've made my face hurt once again.
Oh, well, please.
I mean...
You've always got the finger on the pulse, as Gene Bruce Scott. Oh, that's all we say. So I take it then that you're okay as I look. Now we're at page three. Oh, yes, page four. A return of Gene Bruce Scott at 4:20. And in 1 hour from now, we'll be speaking to Randy Reinholtz.
Yes, absolutely. He's ready to go.
Well, there you go. And we're going to New York now to speak to Peter Franklin, the very same Gabby Cabby. I'm sure we'll have a whole range of things. If we said Sunshine on My Shoulders by John Denver, Gene, would you think that was a useful way to kind of, you know, celebrate the joys of San Diego?
Absolutely. That sounds terrific.
Sunshine almost always.
In full force there, John Denver, Sunshine on My Shoulders. Graham, if you recall, back at the start of this millennium, 2001, we were very impressed during our previous majestic marathon of broadcasting that we actually did up in Teesside with the contribution of one of our ace correspondents, in fact, the sole, let's be honest, sole correspondent par excellence from New York City, the very same Gabby Cabby. You were very impressed, were you not, Graham?
I was. Hi. Really good to talk to you.
He's back with us. Peter Franklin is back, Peter. On board. It's, I believe, where are we? 9:40 p.m. in New York City, is that right?
Gee, I guess so. I don't know what time it is because I can't tell time.
There you go. A traditional voter for the American political system.
Well, I figure you give me such an exalted introduction, I'll just act silly and then they'll say, Alex doesn't know what he's talking about.
There you go. Well, welcome to the official celebration of the end of the Mayan calendar. It's a joint thing we're doing with our colleagues in Los Angeles. They pick up the baton at, I think, 5 a.m. this morning. We'll still be talking to Dean Haglund from The X-Files and more as the show proceeds. But, Peter, it was essential you were part of this whole setup here. Graham, you wish to throw a few questions at Peter about his views on the political system? I mean, as I said, he was calling the shots about Obama before Obama was even elected.
Peter?
Yes.
When he was being elected, the lead-up to it, with the stuff on television, the two of them actually arguing with each other, well, arguing or putting their points across or whatever, and all the time I kept saying to my wife, I really hope Obama gets in, I really hope that the Americans get their man back in, because the world needs this man. This man is the only one. We need a great statesman, and I think he's the one. But a colleague here just now, we were just talking about it, this is before you came on and before I realised you were going to be the next person on, that Alexis was making contact with. And we were just talking, and for some reason we started talking about Obama in another context. And I said, I'm really, really pleased that the Americans elected unanimously that it would be, well, I don't know, it did seem to be unanimous, that he got in. And he said, yeah, isn't it strange, though, how a man can authorise the drone bombing of Pakistan families and civilians in Pakistan, and yet have that emotional, unstatesman-like, but real human being and one of the people, confirming how appalling the whole of the incident that happened last week was. And it affected everybody, and for him, he was a human being and an ordinary citizen in that moment, and it affected him just like every other citizen. What do you feel about that?
Well, I feel that you're mixing in a lot of things there which have nothing to do with each other. In other words, the fact that he as a parent had some tears in his eyes has nothing to do with the fact that he might order the bombing with some drone. I mean, there's different roles. We all play different roles. You can be a businessman and a father. You can be a warlord and a father. So what you saw there was a father, and he did what fathers are supposed to do, cry when kids get, you know, killed. The problem, unfortunately, is that, you see, you're living in the wrong place. And the reason you're living in the wrong place, I don't mean your house particularly, but you're living in the United Kingdom. And by living in the United Kingdom, all of the news that you get about the United States comes through organizations like Murdoch's newspapers or the BBC. It never ceases to amaze me how the amount of knowledge, and I'm not blaming you, it's not your fault, is so wrong, so erroneous, so out of this world, and yet you have these British reporters who are occasionally floating around the United States talking about what's going on here. So I don't really want to fight with you. All that I'm going to say to you is that everything you just said before was based on the nonsense and the rubbish that you hear and read in your fair country.
That's a fair point, of course.
Mm-hmm. I said that without taking a breath.
I did. I noticed that the breath control, as ever, Peter, was immaculate. I have to say, I acknowledge that in every sense of the word. Ed?
I remember, Peter, when we talked to you just shortly after the Hurricane Sandy, wasn't
it? Yeah, Hurricane Sandy. And that you Superstorm gave us, Sandy.
Superstorm,
it was downgraded,
yeah.
Too.
You gave us a very interesting picture of actually what was really going on at that time. How have things progressed from that, then?
Terrible, absolutely terrible. We have the same problem we had after Katrina. After Katrina, nothing was done to help the people, and that's the same thing that's going on now. The only help that these people are getting are from the rest of, let's say, New York City, because, of course, we're not a third world country and we have our own resources. But if you remember, you were told right after Katrina that everything went wrong because Bush didn't like blacks. That was going on because New Orleans has a high percentage of black people. That was the news that was being shoveled all over the world. Well, isn't this strange? We have the identical situation today with Hurricane Sandy. So I guess maybe somebody should say Obama hates whites. That's an example of what I mean of the type of reporting that you hear over there.
So what do you hear?
What do I hear? It's what I see. And I see a government which is totally ineffectual, a bunch of people, bureaucrats and what have you, who don't really care about the heartache and the misery that these people are going. There's thousands and thousands of people that are still homeless up and down the eastern seaboard. And, tragically, a bunch of kids, and of course it was terrific and terrible, get shot, just absolutely terrible, but that kind of supersedes everything else that's going on, which frankly isn't true. But it's a great way to sell newspapers.
We will be looking in 2013 to certainly put you as one of the featured guests on an interview and a debating session. We're going to be putting together for Siren 107.3 FM and Southside Broadcasting on ethics and journalism. And I know you'll have lots of things to add to that.
There isn't any.
Nice one.
I'm serious too.
I agree with you.
Yeah, and I don't want to make this into a downer for you and your nice listeners, but I'll tell you something. You know, Alex, for what I know about you, you're a straight shooter. If for no other reason, you let me say what has to be said. Mm. And there is a group of broadcasters in this world, and you know it happens to be quite large, that lets me talk and lets me say the things I say. Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely absurd. The New York Post, which is owned by Murdoch, who's a character from a James Bond movie, is coming out with the most outrageous, terrible front pages and pictures of these children in Connecticut. And, I mean, that's a classic example of what's going on. My doctor said I shouldn't get so emotional.
That's all right. I mean, again, if people are sort of wondering, well, how can Peter actually have the sort of notion of saying this? Well, I think it's fair to say you've served your time. You were an army medic. You've worked through a whole stack of other setups from that perspective.
And I used to work for the New York Times.
Exactly.
I'll never forget, somebody from the BBC once said to me, well, you know, you're not really a real reporter.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I'm not really a real reporter. I worked for the New York Herald Tribune. I worked for the New York Times. And I did an awful lot of things for the BBC. Alex, when do I get to be a real reporter?
Exactly. Every time you connect with us, at least on that sort of basis.
Graham. Oh, and I'll add you to my resume also, of course.
There we are. Graham, any other sort of areas?
But anyway, this is the holiday season.
Exactly.
I'm starting to feel a little guilty here about doing such a downer.
I think we've got to have sort of a reflection on what has taken us through the last 5,125 years. Obviously, that's the end of the Mayan calendar. How's New York shaping up to this? Because let's see, you've got about another few hours before you actually head into 2021. Don't say 2021, the 21st of December. I was just losing a few years there because it seemed as though it was a very long broadcast-a-thon before you head into the fated day. Is there a kind of sense of anticipation or people saying, no, we're going to actually continue shopping till we drop in any case?
Well, but here's the deal. You see, because of this Mayan thing, you do have a certain number of people who are upset and bothered. So I've decided to retaliate. Early this morning, what I did is I sent out the order to the 13 major taxi garages that under no circumstances is any Mayan to be picked up by a New York City cab. So what's happening right at this moment as planes land at Kennedy Airport? And, you know, they go through customs and immigration. They come out to where the taxi, I think you call it the rank, the taxi rank is. And before people are allowed to get into a New York City cab, they must sign an affidavit that they are not a Mayan. If they are a Mayan,
I think it's important.
Not permit them to get into a New York City cab. Now, I hate to be that mean, but the fact of the matter is I have to retaliate because there are people who are walking around that look like they're on some kind of tranquilizers. They're just bewildered. I mean, people are drinking has gone up tremendously, you know, because of this Mayan thing. And I think that's because of it is. I don't want to advocate violence to Mayans, but if you happen to meet one, and now I'm addressing your audience now, you know, just kind of, I don't know, I guess spit on them.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily endorse that, but clearly in terms of the legendary People of the Sun, direct descendants of the race from Atlantis, they've come up with a range of musical choices as well. We like to feel that they've had their downers. Human Sacrifice was big with them, for instance. That wasn't very good. They did various things with young male genitalia, which I wouldn't go into at any sort of time of the day, but that was barbed wire, basically. And you think, they weren't perfect, but maybe, as they said earlier, I mean, who was it actually, Ed, who gave us the sort of, the three, Arthur Weingarten, who actually had his thoughts as a New York writer and producer of Murder, She Wrote and writer of A Bionic Woman and a whole heap of other things. He had three kind of key areas in terms of what he thought. And this is Peter, somebody who was born in Brooklyn and he was working through this. So I feel he had a sort of sense of reality. Not that we sort of ignore our Los Angeles colleagues here because we love them. We'll be connecting with you again very shortly.
Where is Los Angeles?
You see, I thought you'd say that, Peter, and, you know, it took us a long time to build bridges between Phil Leonis and yourself last time you sort of started triggering this thing.
I think it's to the west of us, I think.
Ed, what were the lines that he actually said? Number one.
Do you know what? That was back at 7 o'clock.
They ran out of stones, okay? They got to the stage and they just thought they'd run out of stones from that point of view. Number two, philosophically, they thought it was a cyclical thing in any case, and they got to the top of the whole thing and they thought they'd actually work for this. Thirdly, then I think they just sort of decided to do something else instead, really. Or maybe they just realised that it was going to be so traumatic that it was the end of history, they might as well just pack up and go home there.
Yeah, but you know, you're talking about anything that the Mayans did. There once was a civilization where the king used to kill his wife.
Mm, it's true.
That same civilization, when they caught a kid stealing a sandwich,
yes,
sent them off to Australia.
I know, yes. Yeah.
So, you know, all civilizations can kind of do naughty stuff. We've done a few bad things in the United States, too, you know.
No.
So I guess I really shouldn't be... You know, I've changed my mind. Just in talking to you, I'm going to announce, after I finish speaking to you, that Mayans can get picked up by New York kids.
Success.
We knew we'd put those positivity things out there and get it sorted. Peter, what are you doing for the holiday season? Do you get time out, or is it a case of no...
Oh, I get it. I mean, being in the taxi business is like being a Peter Pan, because, I mean, you know, our garage, it's owned by my two cousins who I work for, it's a Peter Pan existence because it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week operation. So you can pretty much work when you want to and come and go. And, of course, it's fascinating. The city looks absolutely gorgeous. I always like to say money won't buy you happiness, but it sure can buy decorations.
Nice.
New York looks just absolutely beautiful because the companies and the organizations here are so wealthy, they can put up the decorations. So it is a very, very nice time of year. And for whatever purposes, for some reason, people just seem to act nicer. You know, I mean, forgetting about whether you believe in God or you believe in Jesus or you believe in Christmas, whatever it is, I just, I like it that all of a sudden, instead of 95% of the people being miserable, 40% of the people are miserable. So it's a nice time of year, and I really like it.
Peter, I'm going to give you 26 seconds worth of Mike Dooley, one of our Florida correspondents, who's in Mexico, I think, at this particular moment in time, his special Note for the Universe, which he pre-recorded for us. Here it comes.
Whenever conferring with another, either face-to-face or across the miles, whether a human being, departed spirit, or sentient tree, always speak to the highest within them. Makes such a difference. Amen. The universe. Yeah. As if some trees weren't sentient. Glad you caught that.
Exactly, because I always feel that trees, like Mayans, need to be loved, particularly at this time of year, particularly the Christmas tree. You know, could be all sorts of challenges from that point of view. Peter, as ever, it's been a sheer delight and joy. And up next, a Canadian called Dean Hagland, who's in the X-Files, is over in Los Angeles, probably chomping at the bit, waiting to do all manner of bits and pieces. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us here on Siren FM's very own Midweek Drive Myathon special on 107.3 FM?
Of course, because you always let me rant and rage, and according to my doctor, it's very good for me to rant and rage.
This is sounding good. And the next question, Graham, is what?
And will you come back again, Peter, and talk to us again?
Yes.
I have no choice. I have to. It's almost like I'm addicted. What can I tell you?
Yeah, don't forget Gabby.com, the go-to website. Have you been checking that out, Ed?
Certainly have.
Was there any story there you want to briefly sort of connect with?
Here we go.
Yes. We'll give you some Mayan background music just to sort of settle down whilst this is working through. So it'll take us up to the news. Peter might have one or two thoughts on this. What have we got?
Welcome to Gabby.com.
Yes.
The online garage.
Yes.
Of Gabby the cabbie, who we've just been talking to.
He's still here, yes.
He's still there.
Yes.
And the New York cab driver broadcasts news around New York City to over 300 million?
Million, exactly.
Listeners in 71
yeah,
countries.
Yeah, nobody ever believes that number, you know?
I do. And we've just had you on Siren FM.
Do you see? Only the very best. Just wanted to make that point clear, Peter, you know, because sometimes, you know, it's 300 million. It's out there. That's the key thing. Notice we've got the trees, we've got the birds in the background there. It's all getting very Mayan-esque. But we'll look after them. And don't forget, you can now actually be picked up by a New York cab driver as well. Peter Franklin, we salute you. All the very best for the holiday season. Take care.
Thank
and we'll
you.
Speak in 2013.
Happy
Take care.
Christmas.
Happy everybody. Bye.